And now, this week's helping of the best of English. Hello, this is Michael Poynton at London's Paris studio to continue the story of a man who's been at it now for 50 years. Ladies and gentlemen, Arthur English.
Thank you, thank you. There we go.
Can you recall your first press notice?
No, I can't really.
Well, I'm going to embarrass you here because...
Was it Young Leaguers?
It was.
Yeah.
It was the Young Leaguers concert in All the Shot in...
29?
You've got quite a memory for dates, haven't you?
Well, you find that, you see. A lot of people, when they get to my age, they're very good at dates. They can tell you the day, the time, the date. Because when you get my age, no one's old enough to argue with you. It's what happened yesterday, I can't remember.
Well, the Aldershot News said Arthur English's recitations were really good and he was repeatedly recalled.
Good Lord.
You were 10.
Really?
Yes.
That's very nice, isn't it?
But you had to wait quite a long time for your next taste of success.
I was in the army?
Yes.
A talent competition.
Of course, the king of the talent shows in those days was Carol Levis.
Carol Levis, yeah, twice I auditioned for him.
Did you?
Yeah, I auditioned once in Nottingham. Carol Levis is sitting there, and there's a very attractive young lady singing, an ATS girl, and she'd got the gear on, and she was great. And then when she finished, he called her down and sit next to them, you see. And then, right, next. And I went up, and I did my patter, and he's rabbiting with her all the time, chatting to her, sitting there, not taking a blind bit of notice of me. So I just stopped, and he looked at me, what? Well, are you going to do it? I said, you going to listen? All right, son, he said, that'll do, you know. And I got on with my act and I finished it. He's still rabbiting. I finished it, I come down the side, said it, and stood by the side of him. And he looked at me, well, had he finished? I said, yes, Governor, completely, good afternoon, and walked out. And my officer said, you know you haven't got a job, I said, you don't have to be clever to tell that. But there you go, he was very fond of this young lady, I believe. And I'm...
But you met him again later,
though. Yeah, I met him again in Aldershot when I was a painter and decorator. They were doing a talent competition in on the Hippodrome. Did the audition. There was a few cleaners there and got lots of laughs. Did very well. And Carol ever said, yeah, I was okay. But you've got to remember one thing, son. You've got to remember one thing, son, that if you're going to travel, you can travel all around the British Isles. You can't talk Cockney all the time. You've got to be better than that. You've got to be able to talk all universal. I said, well, Max Miller, Tommy Trinder aren't doing too bad. I didn't get that one either.
He was a Canadian, wasn't he?
He was a Canadian. Yeah. What was I speaking? Oh, I see.
Just testing.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not, you know, I'm not perfect with everything. And no, it's very funny, though, because every time Carol Levis, after that, did interviews or wrote in the paper any stories, he always referred to me as the one that got away, so...
Did he?
I held him no grudge, yeah.
I believe another of your colleagues at that period made sure that you kept your own name because you weren't using it, were you, all the
time? Well, that was my entertainment officer. Mm. I called myself Les Norman. So he said, why do you call yourself Les Norman? I said, it's my stage name, you know. Oh, well. So, because my real name is Arthur Leslie Norman English. I had three uncles, you had to please them all, so that's where that came from. So he said, for goodness sake, with a name like English and a war on, why the devil don't you keep your own name? Arthur English. So that's what I call myself. Arthur Never a Dull Moment English. And when I came out, when I came out of the army, I had my own letter headings. Arthur Never a Dull Moment English, comic, comedian, concerts, cabarets, children's parties. But there's no room to write on the paper. That's right.
You were developing the Spiv Act then. Mm. There's a whole generation that doesn't really know what a Spiv was. How would you describe that?
I'd got a white jacket, which I've always fancied a white jacket because it always looked good, you see. Classy. I was going to say sophisticated, but I won't bother about that. I might start about as sophisticated as atom bomb. And anyway, and I pinched that from Bielefeld in Germany. Yes, we borrowed it when the war finished. Remind me. Send it back. And and I always fancied that with a black bow and the white trilby. Well, I couldn't afford a white trilby in those days. And I was a painter and decorator, so I got a black Homburger from a second-hand shop and painted it white. About 16 coats with like a trashy on it. And I came off doing cabaret I was doing up there, and a bloke said to me, "You're a proper spiv, you are." And I said, "What's a spiv?" And then he explained. "Like you," he said, "with a snap trilby, white jacket with great big shoulders, flash tie, sideboard, little tash. That's a spiv." So I painted sideboards, because, I mean, in those days I was a little bit like darker than I am now. I mean, this is a white wig, and and then I had a little black moustache. My mother-in-law was an upholsteress working for Solomons in Aldershot, and I said to my wife, Ivy, I said, "Get Mum to some of her old flashy material and make me a big flashy tie," which she did, and it was down to my knees. And I said, "I don't wear that. I'm a sophisticated comic. I'm not a red-nosed comic. I wouldn't wear it. I just would not wear it." I just carried on doing that until probably the next question you're going to ask me about the windmill.
Could be, yes. That's the key question, then, really.
That's
through
the
mill.
Question, because that's the first time I wore it. Uh-huh. I got this audition. It was, again, the 16th of March, 1949, and it was raining. And and I said to my wife, "You know, come up. It'll mean losing a quid at work. But come up and we'll go to the Ideal Home exhibition afterwards and see that." And she said, "Yes, I'll come providing you wear that tie." Well, I wore the tie. And I suppose it's never left me since, because it always travels in my case wherever I go in the dressing rooms. And when we get to the windmill, of course, there's thousands of people, and you go downstairs into a prop room underneath, and you put your makeup on, and as I did with the big tie for the first time, the trilby, I'd bought a trilby, now a bowling thing, and taken the green bit off. And then you go upstairs and you wait on the side, and they're dropping like flies. It's a kiss of death. You know, "Thank you, goodbye, next one." And they're in and out. I thought, this geezer's not going to stop me. He won't stop. I'll go like the clappers. He won't get a chance to say, "Stop me." And I went on there, and that's really where all this fast, in fact, not so much now, but I used to talk so fast. And that's where it's all come about, really. Because I wouldn't let him stop me.
300 words a minute, I believe.
Well, when I did my first audition for the radio, for the BBC, I wasn't very successful. And I did 300 words a minute, because they had the parliamentary typist, shorthand person, to take that down for me. And apparently I was too fast for them to keep up with, but that sounds good, doesn't it, really? Yeah. They talk to them so fast, and they're a lot more stupid than me. That's anyway, right. That's another story.
Back to the audition.
Dan Mattel, who was the production manager, came up to me and she said, "Oh, will you take all your things off and get changed and come back up here? Mr. Van Damme would like to see you. He thinks you might be of use here. I don't, but he's the governor." Well, no, that's like straight talking people, you know. Anyway, I came back up and I stood there, and Van Damme said, "Yes." I said, "You want to see me, governor?" No, I don't want to see you. I want to see that spiff chap." I said, "Yeah, that's me." No, he said, "I want, you know, the fellow with the big tie." I said, "Yes, that's me." No, he had a moustache. I said, "That's me. If it's not, I'm living with his wife." And he said, "You're the bloke, right. Right, you can start." I said, "Thank you very much indeed. When?" He said, "Today." I said, "Pardon? Day?" I said, "When?" He said, 12 o'clock. I said, "Well, but 12 o'clock, because it started at 12:15 in those district shows a day. And I got into the dressing room, and there was all guys in the dressing room. There's a radiator there, and I got my little case, and I put my lid up like that, and I got my makeup on, and went and did the act. The wife went and sat out front and saw it, and I came back and took my makeup off, and then went and walked for the wife. Did this 6 times. The time I finished, it was up against this radiator. The case is all buckled up, and the makeup I put on with a spoon. It was all, oh. Well, there you go.
Well, I'm sure our audience would love to hear some more of that legendary spiv character. Let's have some now.
The quickest way to the Tower of London? I said, "Kick Princess Anne's horse." No. And then the guy came up to me, he said, tell me, "Are you a member of the Spivs Union?" I said, "Spivs Union? What's that?" He said, "Well, tuppence a week, you come into full benefit." I said, "Full benefit?" He said, "Yeah. You go down to Labour Exchange, they offer you a job, we fight your case for you." Mind you, I'm down at the Labour Exchange all the time. I'm a founder member. And, no, but it's lovely, all these clubs around where I'm working. They're very nice. You know the clubs, like 12 o'clock at night, you go, there's a big thick door. You bang on the door, a little grill opens. And the bloke says, hello. He said, CID. And the fella says, come in, Sid. And he said, I got a black mirror out there. He said, bring her in. There's no colour bar here. No, it's all happening outside the police station. Big notice the other day. Man wanted for robbery. My mates applied for that. And then there was a... another one, right across Piccadilly. Drink Canada Dry. Harry's gone out to do that. No. We're a very travelled family, I tell you. My sister was in the ATS during the war. She went out to Egypt as an ATS, came back as a mummy, and went to France, went out with every Tom, Dick and Harry, came back with a load of francs, because I was in the war. No, I was in the war, I fought like hell, but they made me join in the end, and I... But it was different when I joined the army. When I joined the army, the doctors used to come up and they touch you. If you was warm, you were in. And then... I was stationed quite near here, actually, when I was in the army, and I met some people, what they call three generationables, you know. There was a boy and his father's father, all living in the same wigwam. And one night, the little boy, Rodney, went out and never came back till 11:30 at night. 11:30! His father waited up for him. When he came in, he said, here, Rod, because he knew him, and he said, listen, nobody got introduced at birth. He said, where do you think you've been? It's 11:30. He said, I've had a marvellous night, Papa. I've been out with one of these Land Army girls. Oh, she went off passionate. So the next night, his father tumbled, gets the bike out, borrows some clips. He never got in till 5:30 the next morning, and his father... No, well, I'm under rehearsed. His father... His father came, he said, where do you think you've been? He said, I went like a Rodney. I went out with a Land Army girl, he was right. Oh, she went half passionate. The next night, Granddad went out, he never came back at all. 3 weeks later, he came trawling, walking, and fought him back in the wheelbarrow. And his son said, where do you think you've been, Pop? He said, I've been like you two tearaways. I went out with a Land Army girl. Oh, she went half patient.
Well, Arthur, could you come back next week for some more nostalgia?
Love to. Thank you very much. Yes, Michael.
Ladies and gentlemen, Arthur English. In The Best of English, Arthur English is recalling highlights from a life in entertainment. The series is researched and introduced by Michael Poynton and produced by Edward Taylor.